Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Roundtable Sports Podcast. I'm your host, John Newman, and I don't have anybody with me today flying solo on the podcast. Things we're going to be touching on, some of the NFL news from around the weekend, the decrepit fucktard lizard man, Urban Meyer getting fired. Ladies and gentlemen, this is satire. But anyways, he getting fired from the Jacksonville Jaguars head coaching job after less than one season there in charge of the Jags. Got some new tires on my Ford Ranger steed, but we are not going to be making the trip down to Texas to watch the Missouri versus Army bowl game, since it is a pre-holiday bowl game. But I'll be looking forward to watch Missouri hopefully whip Army's ass in the Armed Forces Bowl.
I mean, what else is new in sports? Travis Kelce came down with a case of COVID-19 and is now listed as day-to-day.
I heard some snarky remarks about, we get to see now how good Patrick Mahomes is without him. And it's like, all right, well, we still got Tyreek and Mecole, and then our backup tight ends are Blake Bell and Noah Gray, who we drafted this year from Duke. we got Clyde healthy. He looked pretty effective against the Chargers with a 1-2 punch with Darrell Williams, which is just not going to be as good without Travis Kelce, not going to be as good without your tight end, getting some of the safety linebacker attention there. But we should be more than formidable on offense versus the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'm saying we as if I had something to do with the Kansas City Chiefs. No, I'm just a big-time fan. But I guess I'm done talking to Chiefs before everyone tunes out on me. Let's move on. Let's touch on more of the other stuff that happened. You got the Bengals now tied with the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC North for the division lead with a record of 8-6. And then my Chiefs, of course, playing the Steelers could put the foot on the neck there and then make that just a two-horse race in the AFC North. In the AFC East, the Patriots have one game lead over the Bills. They're 9-5. They are actually a team that's done better on the road this season, and I'm going to take a look at where they will be going next Sunday. It'll be Saturday, I believe. It will be versus the Bills, the 26th at noon. So I think that's the day after Christmas. So they will be playing for the division, it looks like, the day after Christmas there in the AFC East. Going to be an exciting matchup there. Look to see Josh Allen. Is it make or break time? You know, he's got to show something here that that he can't play good for just, you know, like 2 months out of the season and then kind of tail off whenever the weather starts to get tough and the conditions start to get tough to play in. And then we really haven't seen anything out of Mac Jones in conditions either. I mean, he handed the ball off, 42 times in that one game, when it was really bad. So these later in the season games, I don't know the forecast. I'm not a broadcaster in the Northeast, but, interesting matchup there. This Thursday, we got the Titans playing the 49ers, 49ers have came on a little bit stronger here towards the end. They've played some crappers still. They're a very hit-or-miss team. The Titans really don't have a too tough of a slate to close out the season. You got the 49ers, the Dolphins, and on the road against the Texans, it looks like. Look to see the Titans be able to close it out in the AFC South, but once again, the Indianapolis Colts are a team that have who I think should be the NFL MVP and Jonathan Taylor on their roster. They get past the Cardinals, then they just have to beat the Raiders, who are teeter-tottering, and the Jaguars, who have shit the bed. So, the Colts get past the Cardinals this Saturday. Oh, Saturday is Christmas, so that is a Sunday game between the Bills and the Patriots. But this Saturday, the Christmas Day game is going to be Colts and Cardinals, who I think there's a MVP candidate there at quarterback before he got hurt, and Kyler Murray. And then there's the true MVP, I think, the leading guy right now, and Jonathan Taylor, and running back for the Indianapolis Colts. Now let's flip it over to the NFC side, see what we got on the NFC side. I know a lot of people have been saying, you know, what we got against the Cowboys. We really don't have anything against the Cowboys except for that stinker, the stinker that they played on Thanksgiving night. The Los Angeles Rams and the Cardinals are neck and neck there. Cardinals 10-4, 9-5 are the Rams. Rams are closing it out against the Vikings, Ravens, and 49ers. And then, meanwhile, we got the Cardinals, who are going to be closing it out a little bit easier against the Colts, the Cowboys, and the Seahawks. I don't know, actually, how much easier that is. You got late-season Pete Carroll team. You got these Cowboys that have, you know, they've came on. They're a 10-4 team. They're the best team in their division. One of the worst divisions, though, in all of football. But you can't take anything away from them. Yeah. So let's move to the NFC North. Packers have the nice firm grip. The only nice firm grip, 11-3. Their next closest contender is 7-7. Packers going to waltz right into the playoffs. Then you got the Buccaneers. They've got a pretty firm grip there, too, at 10-4. They do, too. So the Packs and Bucks, they've got both of them in the NFC, got firm grips on their division. Everyone else can actually, you know, there's pathways for them to not win the division. I'm right, because the Eagles and Washington Redskins aren't playing until today. So technically there's four more games for two of the teams in their division there that have a chance. The Washington football team and the Philadelphia Eagles both have a chance. If the Cowboys lose out and they win out, they would all have the same. One of them could have the same exact record. So that's an interesting thing that's just news for today. So I'm just going to move on from it, and we're going to all chalk it like the Cowboys are firmly in position there, which leads me down to the next road. I'm going to roll the ads, but let's talk about the playoff picture. So it would look like the Chiefs and Packers would have a first-round bye. In the first round of the playoffs, the Patriots and Bills would be playing. The Patriots would have home field advantage. In the AFC side, stand on the AFC side, the Titans in the first round would have home field advantage over the Chargers, and the Bengals would have home field advantage over the Colts. Flipping it over to the NFC side, like I said, I'm going to reiterate it once more. Packers get the first round bye. Cowboys have home field advantage over the Vikings. Buccaneers have home field advantage over the 49ers. And then the Cardinals have home field advantage over the division rival Rams. Okay. The way that I would see that going, you know, the Bills and Patriots right there is a kind of a toss-up matchup right there. They're playing once more before the end of the season, as is, coming up here the day after Christmas on Sunday. You know, that could go either way, and I think that's not even a game that's going to happen, because they already play before the playoffs. So I will say, in this matchup, I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to take who I think is the more experienced, more seasoned quarterback there. I'm not going to say he's going to be better throughout than Mac Jones, but I like Josh Allen more than Mac Jones, so I'm going to take the Bills in that one. The Chargers-Titans matchup there. Honestly, no Derrick Henry for the Titans. Chargers, they have an offense that, if the receivers are getting open, they can control the clock. I kind of like the Chargers in that matchup. I'm going to take the Chargers over the Titans. And then Colts, Bengals down there. I'm going to take Jonathan Taylor. Carson Wentz and the Colts over the Bengals. I think I just took all road teams there, so that's just really unlikely to happen. But over on the NFC side, I'm probably going to be taking Cowboys over Vikings, Buccaneers over 49ers, so two home teams there. But I will take Rams over Cardinals. Yeah, that's what I had for the NFL news that I was going to talk about. I loosely watched this past weekend's UFC card. I was pretty drunk while watching it, but I came in whenever GM3 Gerald Meerschaert was taking on, I think his first name is Nathan Stoltzfus. This is his last name, I know that for sure. But Gerald Meerschaert got a birthday victory. He went risky, went kind of against his coaching. Then at the end of the thing, he said, of course, that weird saying, we've heard it like multiple times, but trying to fit the round peg in a square hole or whatever that means, or the square peg in a round hole. But I don't know. Anyways, he found a way to get it done, and that was the first fight that I watched at the night. Then I went on a beer run, came back from that trip to some fucking rude-ass haters hating on the fucking podcast, but fuck them. Anyways, yeah. I came back to Ricky Simon, Ricky Simone dominating. He dominated old buddy Rafael Assunção. I think at the end of the fight, his quote was, break the bank, Hollywood pays out, or something crazy he shouted towards the end. That was nice. Good knocks. Then there was the women's fight, the Angie Hill fight versus, who was she fighting? Was it Lemos or... Yeah, it was Amanda Lemos versus Angela Hill. The announcers were tripping on it, too. It's kind of hard to say that in a flow. Amanda Lemos versus Angela Hill. Angela Hill, Amanda Lemos, yeah. Anyways, it was a really good matchup. I liked the output, constant pressure from both women, and took us up into the main card. I don't even know, was that right before the main event, or... the fight that was kicking off the main card. I can't remember. Interesting fight. Anyways, I spaced off. I think I was trying to get the stream going for that Woodley and Paul. What a disaster. You know, of course, I'm not going to pay for that, so I just watched it through the channels, you know. And... we, in the MMA world, we got, you know, played again, I think. If you were somebody who spent money on it, you got played. But I thought Tyron was going to whip some ass. But it's not what I'm here to talk about. I'd rather talk about what Derek Lewis did. Truly is the knockout king. I've had the shirt for a year now. It says Knockout King on it. But that was from heavyweight Knockout King, now all around Knockout King. Derek the Black Beast Lewis. I got the Balls Was Hot shirt as well. Yeah, that's probably my favorite fighter in the UFC, come to think of it. Just the fiery attitude and the no-nonsense every fight. You know, he's going to go hard. The fact that he's such a size mismatch for a lot of the more athletic 265-pound division fighters, it makes it interesting. Yeah. Back to the Jake Paul Woodley thing. I hope I hope Tommy Fury is healthy and shit, and gets a chance to fight against Jake Paul. That would be hilarious to me. They were like, oh, it happened, but he pulled out. But it was like, didn't he get COVID or something? They all got COVID, I think. So, I mean, you can't really call that like backing out or running from the fight, you know, when you get sick with a disease that's like infected so many people around the world. But, yeah, nonetheless, I'm not here to talk about that. Talk about some sports, talk about some fights. Shout out to my cousin Garrett and Auburn Rugby for winning the NCAA, I believe, Division II NCAA National Championship. So they're doing that. Yeah, that's pretty fucking badass, dude. No lie. This extremely douchey, extremely ineloquent fucking spoken version of my podcast where it's just another kind of just spit it out fucking show. But we are up 2 listeners from the week prior. I'd like to thank you guys for listening to the Roundtable Sports Podcast. Yeah, I'm not really sure who out there is listening to it, but thank you guys. I don't think I'm going to cut out just yet. I'm going to look up another story that I can give you guys a briefing on. Yeah, just give me a moment. What the fuck was I about to do? I was about to skip over somebody who likes my tweets on Twitter, beating up Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, Bully B, Bilal Muhammad. Every now and again, you just gotta, you know, tip your crown at the guys who get on there and straighten some people out on Twitter. Make sure people are, you know, not getting over fucking zealous in their head about who they are with what they do. Bully B's one of them. Fuck yeah, Bilal. He got the job done against Stephen Thompson. There's times in that fight I thought they might stop it, but hey, he kept working submission game and making it a grind. And respect to Bilal. Also, you know, respect to Dawkins for stepping up in competition there against Lewis. He was 12-3 going in there. 12-3 to 12-4. That's a tough hit on your winning percentage, but I mean, you're still real young in your career. But moving on beyond that, looking ahead, we've got some more fights coming down the chute. We have Calvin Kattar stepping back in against Giga Chikaitse. Muslim Salikov taking on Michelle Pereira. And then we have on the prelims of that, I'm going to say these wrong, but we have Brian Kelleher taking on Said Yakub Khabibrahimov. I don't know. Dakota Bush taking on Vyacheslav Borshev. And then, like I said, those other two fights were the main card, Muslim Salikov and Michelle Pereira, and then Calvin Kattar and Giga Chikadze. UFC 270 on the 22nd of January. So these fights, you know, going to be a long time from now. We got Francis Ngannou, Cyril Gane. We got Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo, Greg Hardy, Alexei Olenek, Cody Stam, and Said Nurmagomedov. Movsar Ivalev taking on Ila Topuria. Poliana Botello taking on Ji Yeon Kim. Worley Alves taking on Jack Della. Tony Gravely taking on Simon Oliveira. Rodolfo Vieira taking on Wellington Turman. Traven Giles taking on Michael Morales, Viviana Reyo taking on Alexa Grasso, Matt Steamroller Frivola taking on Gennaro Valdez, Kay Hansen taking on Jasmine Jazdavicius. I don't even know. Bookings further on, we could be getting messed with by some people who are editing on good old Wikipedia right now, but Hermanson and Strickland is also booked to be a headlining fight night early in February. Then we move on. The next pay-per-view after that, we have Adesanya taking on Whitaker again. We have Kyler Phillips taking on Marcelo Rojo. Alex Perez taking on Matt Schnell. Vince Patchell taking on Mark Madsen. Vince Pitchell taking on Mark Madsen. Roxanne Modafferi. Modafferi taking on Casey O'Neill. We got Carlos Ulbrich taking on Fabio Chirant. Ed Herman taking on Maxim Grishin. We got Liomana Martinez taking on Ronnie Lawrence. Alexander Hernandez taking on Renato Moicano. That one I fucking nailed. I fucking nailed Renato Moicano. AJ Dodson taking on Jacob Malkoon. Douglas Silva de Andrade taking on Sergey Morozov. Orion Corse taking on Mike Mathatha. All right. So you see where we're at now. We are at a position where the best... Hang on. Let me add a flag here. We are at a position now where the best of the matchmaking, the best of the matches has to be set up by kind of us calling for it, us, you know, wondering what's up with the inactivity, because there's a lot of room for those cards to be moved to under and then other cards to be moved to the main card. There's obviously two levels to prelims now. You got early prelims, and then you got your main card. So none of those were divided yet. It seemed like a lot is going to be left to matchmaking, to later day booking, like, you know, maybe those cards are filled out for the contractual obligations of ESPN and have to have names on them right now at this moment. But I see some of those fights, you know, not the headlining ones, not the Adesanya and Whitaker, none of those are probably set in stone pretty much. Those are when those are going down. But if we know anything about the UFC, there's going to be O'Malley's going to get added to something. If he gets his hand cleared, if he gets that stuff cleared up, O'Malley's probably getting added to something. Who else with recent performances? You know, Derek Lewis, probably going to get added to something. Even guys without recent performances, let's see, when's the last time we've seen Curtis Blaydes? Yeah, it's about time we see Curtis Blaydes again. He beat Biggie Boy Rozenstruik. Be Jairzinho in September, so yeah. You see possibly a Sandhagen, possibly a Dillashaw match, possibly, you know. Yeah. Kai Kara-France had the big knockout, the big TKO over Cody Garbrandt. So Kara-France, a guy who does that in the first round, he's not going to need that much time off. But that's a guy who's steadily fought, you know, twice a year, except for, you know, 1 year since he's been in the UFC. But maybe he starts fighting more frequently. I don't know. I just read Derek Lewis says the knockout record doesn't mean anything, but Dana White. That's the new burner right there, Dana White. Fucking LOD's achievement. It's because the word LOD is right there. I guess we are at the point in the year as well. It's time to look at how we did numbers-wise. How did we compare to the NFL this season? This is one of the driving points. Let's take a look. One of the factors here that makes our sport more legitimate is there's one referee in there, and there's two competitors, and it's a one-on-one competition. No nonsense, Keith Peterson had 53 fights officiated this past season. Fifth most. Fourth most, Jason Herzog with 62. Chris Tongioni had 86. He was the third most used referee. Second most used referee in the UFC, Mark Smith. And first was, of course, the main man in charge of all combat everywhere, Herb Dean. 111 fights officiated for good old Herb. I will say this now. Okay. Maybe the viewership numbers aren't there to back you up in saying that the UFC is the more popular sport, but internationally, the UFC is the more popular sport than the NFL overall. If you look at the fighters on Instagram, they're more followed than the players of the sport in the NFL are followed, and that is nationally, internationally, everywhere. And that's minus maybe Tom Brady. You know, that's minus Tom Brady. And this is a sport that's been around since the late 1800s, early 1910s at the college level. And then you're comparing it to the UFC, which is a sport that was made in the modern post-gambling on sports era. It was made in an era where that was the number one issue of why it probably couldn't work in most places. That was an issue with probably why, you know, and then the fact is people, they didn't understand that, you know, the cage wasn't a weapon in the sport. It was to contain, it was to make, you know, separate the fight from the fans, the fight from the audience. They looked at it as maybe something that, oh, they could drag their face in it like a cage match from the WWF, the ECW, but no. That's not what the sport was. It was, you know, like a Coliseum-style event. And it took years and years to get it legalized in the states that host the fights and host the events now. And worldwide, it's just gained international fame because it's, you know, whenever states were outlawing it here, some of the best fighters in the world went and fought in Japan and Pride, like Chuck and Rampage and Rashad. And, well, I think Rashad actually was a little bit younger than those guys. But anyways, just the fact that they came back here and they brought, you know, international audiences with them to watch the UFC. Eventually, Zuffa was able to make deals where they got the catalog of Pride and Strikeforce. And then ESPN was able to make a deal to somehow get the Zuffa, you know, all of that stuff, get the UFC, you know, make Zuffa still their own independent company and organization, and they can do their own investments and ventures, I should say, not vestments. That's not a real word. They can go on their own ventures and go do their own, you know, business prospecting in other worlds. This ESPN deal has probably, you know, put it on more television households that would not have had access to the UFC, but it's also, it's made it a little bit more expensive to watch, I would say, having to have the ESPN Plus to watch, because it just feels tacky to have to go to these streaming websites to stream something that, you know, you care to claim for, and you actually do. I actually do, at least. I actually really do care for the sport. With that being said, as big of an asshole as you guys think Mike Perry is, Mike Perry, wherever you are out there in the world, I hope you're having a good day, dude. Because people can be fucking mean on the internet. Fuck people. The superlatives of the sport of the UFC make it so much better than the sport of football, where the superlative always draws comparison. This superlative always draws comparison to, like, weapon. It's how much PSI was in Mike Tyson's punch, how many joules were in that punch, how many joules of energy in one strike, you know, how many pounds per square inch, you know, how much foot torque, how much, you know, pounds per foot, you know, the average person can only generate, you know, so much, but Mike and guys like Francis Ngannou go over 1,000 pounds in foot torque in their punch, and that's what makes it the ultimate sport, the ultimate chess match, even more so than boxing, because it's all of the elements of what a man can use to defeat you. He can grapple with you. He can press his weight on top of you, smother you. And if you save enough energy on the bottom and you wiggle your way out, you get back to your feet, you can lay some dangerous hands on him because he spent his time smothering and trying to gain position that you were able to get up from. And we've seen that happen, and that makes for the most spectacular comebacks. You know, boxing comebacks are great. I'm not going to say which one is better, a good comeback in a boxing match or a good comeback in a UFC fight. But I think a good comeback from an ass-whooping in all categories of a UFC fight for there to be a victory, that's pretty it's awesome to see it. Whereas in football, the superlatives are always, oh, this many yards over this amount of time in this career, and oh, this many yards per carry. It's still not like this guy. This guy was better. Like, it's always everybody thinks the guys from the past were better in that sport. It's just always the way it is. In this sport, in the UFC, they let everybody think on their own. You know, as a fan base, they don't try to control their fans' fanhood, if that makes any sense. They let us pick which fighters we root for. I mean, really. And there's no work to it. There's, you know, promotional work that they try to do for every single fighter that's at a certain level. I just kind of wish these fighters got a little bit more control over the promotional side again. Not to say that some of them don't have great promotions outside of the UFC, but why is it so hard for fighters that are starting out in the UFC to get that promotional work, that promotional help? Like, you know, we're here, the digital editors are here, the people that want to have you talk to you on a podcast, we're here. It's just a matter of time. It's happening, folks. The Roundtable Sports Podcast is part of it. It's just going to take, you know, the right scheduling. Sometime after the New Year's, I'm going to see if my friend Ross Houston wants to come on and talk a little bit about, you know, his journey from Cage Warriors to Bellator. To making his debut in Bellator as a challenger against Michael Venom Page, that they challenged MVP 3 rounds. They went the distance, you know. Anytime, you know, you go 3 rounds, you go the distance with a guy like Michael Venom Page, and it's your debut in the promotion, it's going to put you kind of like, okay, you got shut down by the gatekeeper of this promotions division here with Venom Page, who beat Douglas Lima, who was the champion at the time that Ross signed. But Lima was on a 2-fight losing streak. So that's a little bit of MMA math that we don't want to get into, especially with somebody that I respect like Ross Houston. Just look for him to win his next matchup, maybe win his next few matchups. Overall, he's a good guy. You know, I met him on Instagram through, you know, messaging him, and he chats back with me, just a casual fan, somebody who told him, you know, you inspire me to go and hit my heavy bag days that I don't feel like doing that. And even though, you know, us MMA fans kind of put Bellator as the number two promotion. It feels, you know, like a little bit, just a little bit slightly tackier than the UFC. We could all be better fans, and we could all benefit by, you know, watching some more Bellator, learning the names, and you know, we become better MMA fans in 2022. I'm going to look into the Paramount Sports packages and things like that so we can stay up to date on that, and our circles and our communities on, you know, stay informed with not just the UFC, because the UFC is not the only thing that's good that's happening in mixed martial arts. Obviously, the PFL is doing some great things as well. We get access to from ESPN+. Then we get, you know, with Fight Pass, access to a lot of the other promotions, the LFA, Cage Fury Fighting Championships, and I'm not sure if Cage Warriors is going to be on Fight Pass anymore, but I think they still do a lot of great work. I know, I think it's Lewis is the name of the man who is promoting them. Is it Lewis Simpson or something? Who runs their promotional side, still making incredible strides for MMA. Prospects that I didn't mention that we're still going to be looking for, you know, Ian Garry, we're going to be looking for him to do something. We've got other guys out here going to be coming up. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Roundtable Sports Podcast. I was just throwing an idea out there towards the end, something somebody we could possibly have on this show to give us an inside glimpse, an inside look. This has been John Newman with the Roundtable Sports. I hope you all have a great and fantastic Christmas. Happy New Year, happy holiday, and I will be seeing you next year. Hopefully cut down to about 204, 203, somewhere around there. Peace.